and welcome to episode 28 of That Yoga Woman's podcast, a podcast where yogis, yoga teachers, and studio owners share stories of their lives on and off the mat. I'm Jules Buchanan, a yoga teacher and your host. This week, I'm talking to Sidoni Graham. Sidoni, or Sid as she's known, is born and raised in my new neck of the woods in the Northeast. We met through working together at our new local hot pod in Morpeth, and I heard that Sid is well into rock climbing. Turns out that's a bit of an understatement. She won the British Mountaineering Youth Championships at the tender age of 13, or bless. So I'll be asking her to share more about her love of climbing, when it started, where it came from, and also where it's taken her so far. I read that she wanted to be a professional climber, so I'll find out if that's still on her radar and what her life would look like if she achieved that goal. As well as finding out about her yoga journey so far, she qualified to teach in 2019 after studying in India, I'll also be asking Sid what her teaching life was like pre-pandemic, how the pandemic affected her work, and whether she has plans to change what her yoga business looks like now that restrictions are starting to ease up and face-to-face teaching is resuming. Sid, like many of us, teaches at a number of local studios as well as specialised yoga for climbers sessions at a local climbing centre. Sid is also, like many of us, worried about the impact of climate change, so I'll ask her to share some of her views on that, as well as asking her for some info on her favourite local haunts that I can explore. I really hope you enjoy listening to our conversation. So, Sid, thank you and welcome to That Yoga Woman's podcast.
Thank you for having me. Cheers.
I need to ask you, Sid, because I have this as well, like having a man's name, Sid, or at least like a name that people expect to belong to a man, because you shorten it, don't you? How do you find that?
Did you say your name was a man's name as well?
Yeah, Jules is often. Yeah, well, I think because I used to work with a lot of international people.
Yeah.
International people like French, Spanish, etc. Europeans mainly, they would expect it to be a bloke. So yeah, because the way it's spelled, it's more, I want to, it's not Jules Holland. It's more Jules Ejim or like Jules, I can't think. It's not like Jules and J-O-O-L-S. It's J-U-L-E-S. Like Judge Jules. That's where it comes from.
Okay, I see.
So yeah, that I've had that a lot where I've been in meetings, I've gone on to conference calls and obviously in my corporate life, not so much now, but people are like, oh, I'm waiting for Jules Buchanan. I'm like, hello, it's me. And then they're like, oh, right. It's just been a bit of a shock. Have you ever had that scenario where people are like?
Well, when studios have boards, like the studio that we're at, Morpeth, it says, you know, with a teacher timetable, it'll say Sid on it. And I think there's been a few times where people have turned up expecting a guy and it's been me and they're like, oh right, okay. I actually had one instance actually when I was younger as well. I used to coach climbing when I was younger and I had a youth group and they'd seen me and I'd done my little introduction and said, hi everyone, my name's Sid, da, da, da. And they were only like age 6 to 8 I think, and I was walking upstairs and one of them went, is Sid a boy or a girl? I was like, oh, great, that's fab, that's really nice.
Where does your name come from originally?
It's Sidonie, so it's French. Neither of my parents are French or have any French relatives. I've got Spanish on my mum's side, but it's a French name and they were watching a film and thought, oh yeah, that sounds cool. So that's where it came from.
Oh, that's lovely. What a nice story.
Nice. But then I asked my mum, seriously, about a month ago this came up, and I said, mum, is my name Sidney or Sidonie? And she went, well, I'm not really sure. I don't really know. I've always had Sidney growing up, but then I asked her and she said, oh, Sidonie. Yeah, I'm not really sure. And she said, just say how you feel on the day.
No, mum, like, you want to, like, what the
so Sid's easier, you know, we'll go with Sid.
Yeah, that was the obviously intention. She's like, yeah, I don't know about the last bit, whatever.
Yeah, do what you want. Depend on how professional you want to sound.
Yeah, or how French. It just depends. If we're still friends with the French, then that's all good. But otherwise, just change it. Revert to Sydney. It's all good.
There we go.
So did you find that climbing came naturally? Like, I'd like to know more about your climbing, what it means to you. How did you get into it to start with? Just tell me about it.
Okay. So maybe start with how I got into it. I think I was 9 years old, I think. And I'd done gymnastics from a young age, and I'd always been, you know, obsessed with moving. I was quite like an energetic kid, and I always needed to move around. And that classic thing you hear when, oh, I was just always climbing on stuff. And just, and then I started going to a wall in Newcastle, and I just started off doing like kids classes and things. And I went with a friend, and I just really enjoyed it. And I think probably from my gymnastics, I took to it quite well. And then I just progressed through there, and then started competing, just doing, you know, really more local competitions. And then I got onto the GB junior team and did some Europeans and internationals, and it just progressed from there, really. I've always just enjoyed it. Competition wasn't ever in mind, but it was, you know, a kind of natural thing through the sport. Yeah.
So what does it mean to you, climbing?
Oh God, that's like asking what yoga means to you as well. It's that whole cliche that I don't want to say it because I'm not going to swear on this podcast.
No, please. Well, some people have. It's fine. All right. Just mark the box explicit, and then people are aware that the swear words are coming.
It's all right. I can pass it without sounding really cliche and like, oh, it's like climbing's a lifestyle. It's not sport. It's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. So I basically base my life and a career in a way around climbing, and you know, I teach yoga, and I climbing and yoga are the two passions, really. But climbing, there's just, it takes you to so many places in the world, and I like climbing because you can go somewhere and travel somewhere, and you can walk and do whatever, and you can see the landscape. But when you're climbing, I feel like you're becoming part of the landscape, you know, because you're on the rock and you're in these valleys, you're not just on top of them, and you're really getting involved with the environment that you're in. And I just think that's the best thing about it. I think it's amazing. And you know, you go anywhere and I see a piece of rock and I'm like, oh, what's that? Is that climbable? Yeah.
Do you interested in geology as well then? I suppose you have to be to a certain extent to make sure the rocks are safe that you're going to climb on. Is that right?
So there's all different types of rock depending on where you climb in the world, whether it's volcanic, and depending how high you are, altitude wise, the rock's going to change. And even, you know, different parts of the UK, we've got all these different rock, like in Northumberland where we are, it's sandstone. And then you go down to like the Peak District where my boyfriend lives, and it's gritstone, which is like a harder, coarser rock. And then there's limestone there, which is smooth. And it's really interesting, actually. And it all the different types of rock lend itself to, you know, different styles of climbing. So whether it's like a bit more burly and slappy, which is like gritstone. And then, you know, limestone is a bit more hard pulling, and the holds are always smaller. It's cool. It's great. It's all these different doors. You're looking. Oh yeah.
Yeah, you're losing me now. I'm just thinking of like imagining gripping onto a ledge with my little weak grippy fingers, thinking, oh, I can't think of anything. No.
There's loads of different types, you know. This is when people that are in those zone out, they're like, oh God, she's talking about different types of rock, for God's sake.
No, but I wanted to know about it because I think that's part of it, isn't it? I hadn't thought about that before, but I guess it is part of it because you can't be, is a different equipment then based on the different types of rock, presumably, and the style that you're climbing in.
Yeah, in different styles of climbing as well. So my main discipline is bouldering, which is rocks that aren't as high, and you can climb on top of them as well, and you just use like a crash pad underneath. And then the sport climbing, which is kind of most commonly what people think about when they think of climbing, is when you take a rope up with you and it's higher and you can fall onto the rope. And then there's trad climbing, which you like put your own gear in as you go up, and it's a bit more dangerous, but a bit more skillful. All different types of that.
More dangerous than just having a crash pad underneath you.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's actually the one that you take the rope up with you and clip in as you go sport climbing is a bit. I don't want to say safer, but it's this most likely less risk involved. was probably more big risks, but less likely to just like break your ankle or something, you know, falling on a not broken
yes,
my ankle.
Yeah, less break your ankle, more your neck. I mean, yes. It's one of those. It's less likelihood, but the injury is going to be much more severe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, so do you then now mix up your visits to a climbing centres, or are you out in the wilds all the time? Like, how does that work? Do you find climbing walls really tame now because you're?
Yeah, I mean, climbing walls really, for what I do, I like to climb outside, and that's, you know, that's what I focus on. So walls really are just for training. I don't go to the wall as like a, that's not where I like to display my passion, you know. I just use it for training, and especially with teaching yoga, and you'll know this as well, you get tired during the week. It's really physical. So now, since teaching full-time, I have to amend my training. It's shorter sessions and I can't spend quite as long at the wall, and then my weekends are used for going out and climbing outdoors, and because you get tired, you know, it's hard. Like, you know, you teach like 4 or 5 classes a day and it's really physically taxing. Yeah, you have to take rest.
So do you have a structured training plan then? Excuse my ignorance, I just don't know. Do you have a proper plan?
I do. I don't have a coach or anything, but I have a plan that I follow. Yeah, it keeps me sane, you know. I like to know what I'm doing on different days, and I like today on I had a taught a class this morning. And then I like went to there's a hill that I drive past on the way home, and I do like my hill sprints on the way back before I have my breakfast and stuff. You know, I have to, it's like fitting stuff in when you can. And if, especially with teaching, like if I don't plan it, it's not gonna, I'm more likely to do it if it's written down, you know, rather than not. And I'm not an organized person in general at all. So this is like, it's something I'm passionate about and that I want to do. I'm going to write it down, but everything else I'm like, oh, tax, what? Just like, yeah, I've got to do my tax return. What? When?
Yeah. So you're more about the training plan and then like the activities rather than like the admin.
So, yeah, probably. It's probably not the right way around, but.
So what you said as well, that climbing has taken you all over the place, like where, give me an idea, like I know there's walls and rocks and everywhere, but where have you been to climb then, and where's been your favorite place to climb?
So most of my trips, holidays wise, I have a van which I go away in, so I drive around Europe. I went to Spain for like 6 weeks in the van. Actually, that was my friend's van. We went to Spain in, and we did 2 of us 6 weeks in a Ford Transit Connect.
Wow.
It's basically a car with a little box on the back.
Yeah, you must be like really best mates.
Oh, yeah.
Well, or not at all now, not speaking.
Anyone else in that small space. I couldn't even have done that with my boyfriend. I would have gone mental. So Spain, lots of different places in France. I've been to South Africa, Italy. Where else have I been? This is all outdoor climbing. And then competition-wise, I've been to Bulgaria and Austria, just, you know. But the trips I go on now, I would never go to like an indoor wall, like unless it was raining or something, I would go.
Oh, so you don't go abroad and then go to a wall in that country? No, that's like a big, that's like a climbing no-no. What are you thinking?
Yeah, what are you doing? Yeah.
Like, that, are you joking right now?
If there was a string of like really bad weather for a while and, you know, you just wanted to move a bit, you could go to a wall, but yeah, not. I wouldn't make a habit of it, definitely.
And do you climb every day? Or do something related to it every day?
Every day when I'm here, I do. Yes, I do. So whether that's climbing or fingerboarding, which is like fingerboarding is you basically have a piece of wood with holes drilled into it and you hang off it. And this is like to load your fingers, and you can add weight to it as well and do pulls, or like I'll do weighted pull-ups or stuff on the wall. And
wow, so your fingers must be so strong then, that little grip.
They're okay, but like I get, you know, one thing with climbing, you get like finger injuries and niggles. So these injuries that people day to day would never think about, and you think, what are you whining about? But then a climber will have like a tendon injury. Like I'm working with one in my finger now that's really painful, and it's like the end of the world. Like I'd rather break my ankle than injure my finger.
So what's a weighted pull-up then? Like you've got weights on your ankles and you're still trying to pull yourself up?
I wear like a harness with like a rope or some loop, and you'll attach weights to it and like progressive load pull-up. So it's just like a strength building thing basically. So rather than using your body weight, you're adding more weight onto it. And
wow.
Yeah.
It's hardcore.
But it's kind of compressive with yoga though, because like all climbers start, you get, because you have overdeveloped muscles in your back and like none on the front because you're very rarely pressing. So everybody starts to curl and round. So yoga is like really nice to open it up, but it's the never ending battle between the two. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like it. Where's been your least favorite place to climb?
Oh, I can't answer that.
Yeah, you can.
I can't.
You're not going to offend a whole country. You don't have to name a specific climbing wall in the UK. Like, oh, don't go there. That centre's rubbish.
I went, I guess maybe not necessarily worst places to climb, but I'm not as good at climbing on like limestone, which is like smaller holds and steeper. So not that I don't like it, but I'm just not as good at it. So there's some limestone venues in the Peak District. And I went to Somerset a couple of weeks ago to visit my boyfriend's family. And there was a random venue in Gloucester that we went to on the way down. And I was like, oh, this is rubbish. This is great.
Why was it rubbish? Was it just too easy for you? Like, what was about it?
No, it was hard. It's not my style. So if there's anyone listening from Gloucester, then nothing against Gloucester, but I wasn't really a fan of the climbing.
I mean, the whole thing strikes me as like really like dangerous. Like I'm scared of heights anyway. Uh-huh. And like, have you had many, I mean, we were talking before about, oh, you know, the risk is higher of a more severe injury, yeah, or like, oh, you could probably just break your wrist. Like, oh, okay. But like, have you had scrapes? Have you had injuries from this?
I've had, like, I've ruptured my left rotator cuff, which is just, it's kind of still a bit weird. So like now, when I do a bind, my right arm goes back and I can draw my shoulder back, but my left one, see how it rolls forward?
Oh, yeah.
Can't get it back. So things like that, I've not, touch wood, had any massive fatal...
Oh, good.
I tripped over on a climbing mat once and fell over and broke my little finger. That's about the biggest injury.
I bet that was so annoying as well, just falling over on the flat.
It's like one of those things when you just reevaluate your life choices, you know, like freaking out.
Have you, you know, when Tom Cruise does his climbing in the Mission Impossible, is that, I'm imagining you doing stuff like that. Is that the sort of thing, or is that like totally not what you do?
No, that's not what I do. That very Hollywood glamour. But I mean, I think Tom Cruise does a lot of his own stunts. Definitely not the scene that I know that you're mentioning though, when he's like on the side of the cliff. But he does a lot of his own stunts, I think, but he definitely didn't, solo up a cliff. But yeah,
So obviously traveling for climbing has been pretty much curtailed by the pandemic, I'd imagine.
Yeah,
so presumably you've been climbing all around the local area. Like, where are your favorite places around Northumberland to go?
You know, Northumberland is like a mecca for,
is it?
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, there's so many places. So there's a few places near Alnwick and like more north. So en route to Scotland, so this place called Bowden, Kylo. If you haven't been there, by the way, even like places like Kylo, it's like a wooded area and it's really nice just to walk through. It is a plantation, so it's not a natural woodland, but it is maintained, so it is really nice. And then you can go further west, like towards Carlisle, as if you're driving to Carlisle, but not quite that far. And there's some really nice areas like near Hadrian's Wall as well. There's loads dotted about.
Because I went to Sycamore Gap the other week, which is really
near there, actually, near Sycamore Gap.
Yeah, there's a big wall that someone was climbing up there, and I just looked at me and my husband looked at each other like, not a chance.
Sycamore Gap. Lovely though, isn't it?
It's really nice. It is lovely. It's on Hadrian's Wall, isn't it? So listeners, if you've never heard of it, you don't know what I'm talking about. It's on Hadrian's Wall, and it's like this, there's two mounds either side, and it goes down into a little dip, and there's like a big tree, sycamore tree, funnily enough, in the middle of the gap, and it's lush. I've got loads of pictures of it, but it's quite hard because there's always people there, and you don't want people in your picture, but then there's always people trogging through wanting their pictures. Yeah. So it's a bit, you have to hang around for a bit to get a good snap, but it's worth it, I think.
Quite nice. You can see it from the road though as well. If you're just driving down the military road, you can see it.
Yeah, it reminded me a bit of when you drive towards, what's that thing? Where people celebrate
that thing,
you know, Stonehenge.
Oh, Stonehenge.
That's like that round thing, you know, with stones. I didn't even say that. Yeah, it's like, it reminds me of that because you can sort of drive up to it, can't you? And then you can sort of see it. And it's like, it reminds me a bit like that. You're like, oh, it's there. And then you have to like, whoa, be careful on the road because, but everyone slows down to see it.
Yeah.
But not so much up here because there wasn't as much traffic. But yeah, you would if you knew it was there, wouldn't you? Just stop, have a little slow down and look at it. So are you planning your next climbing trip and where is that going to be, do you think?
Oh, God, I was planning trips like since last year. So we're going to go, me and my boyfriend, we have a trip planned in October for just like just a couple of weeks. His sister lives just outside of Paris. She has two kids, so we go there, and there's an amazing climbing area called Fontainebleau, which is again, it's about an hour outside of Paris.
Is that, was there a water called that? I'm sure there's like a water Fontainebleau, or it might be, it's not a wine, I don't think. I've seen it before. The name rings a bell, like a mineral water
or wine.
I've seen it on a label, that's all I'm saying.
So we'll go there for a couple of weeks. That's just bouldering. And then next year, we're going to go on a bigger trip from February onwards. And we'll start off in Font and then do a van excursion, maybe to Spain, to Switzerland, and come back down. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does your boyfriend also climb?
He does. I couldn't go out with anyone that didn't climb. I couldn't do it. Do you know what? I'm so jealous of him because he has he's a paramedic to the NHS, and he has something called a bank contract, which is, it's almost like a 0 hours contract, but not quite. Like, you get all the perks of having a normal contract, like pension, etc. But he has like freedom with it, so he can book shifts when he wants, and he could go away for like a month and nobody would ask any questions and then come back and just work. It's like the ideal contract for a climber or just anybody that loves to travel and get out.
God, that sounds amazing. But then it's a tough job. Must be a tough job to do that in the first place. So he deserves some time off. We'll let him off.
He does.
What about the weather? I know you're off to Spain and France, and obviously it's nicer weather there than it is usually in Northumberland, but does the weather really matter for climbing? Like, if it's, it does. Okay. In what? So scenario is like proper peeing it down. You just wouldn't even bother going out.
Yeah. You can't climb when it's raining. And there's also, you have to wait for things to dry up, and different types of rock, you have to wait longer. So in Northumberland, the rock is sandstone, which is really porous. And if you climb on the rock when it's been raining heavily or it's not dried out properly, then you're going to damage the rock because it comes really soft and fragile. So usually you wait like 1 to 2 days. Whereas things like limestone, you can climb on it sooner, but it's going to be a bit like, it's just basically, long story short, I'm rambling. No, you can't climb in the rain. Wait for it to dry.
No, it's interesting. Don't cut yourself off. It's interesting. I think it's just like all this science, like that whole drying out thing must play havoc with your plan. That's what I'm thinking. I like a plan. But you're saying, like you, you like to know what you're doing. But then if it rains, all that's all off, and you've got to rethink, rejig things.
Yeah, exactly. And then you just go into utter sadness because nothing else matters.
And just to drag yourself to the climbing wall and be like, oh, I don't not want to be here.
Oh my God, this is awful. No, I'm joking. But
how do you normally, I've not been to many, well, actually zero climbing walls. I've seen them from afar and thought, oh, don't
we should go.
No. No, we shouldn't go. See, this is where like most of my guests on the podcast have been far away. So I'm like, yeah, one day it might happen. But you're like, yeah, no, let's go. Let's go soon. So I'm terrified of heights. I just look at a climbing wall and think, oh God, like hurt my fingers. I'm just gonna be in pain. So but most of the time when I've seen them, there's been all kids all over them. Like they seem to love it, don't they? Like you said, when you were a kid, like scrabbling up things.
I think it's because it's natural. Yeah, it's a natural human instinct to want to climb, I think. You know, when you're a kid and you're, like you're saying, you want to climb on stuff and you've got all this energy, and I think it's like translates. And especially if you're climbing indoors, which obviously is a good way to get into it, you walk in, there's like crash mats down, there's walls and all these colours, and it's literally like a soft play for adults. That's how I like to think of it. It's like it's a socially acceptable soft play. Like, what's not to like about that?
You are selling it a little bit more to me, but the fact that there's like a heights involved, there's no massive heights in a soft play. not endangering ones.
Well, an adult soft play.
You mentioned earlier climbing as a sport. Like, so you obviously consider it a sport and, you know, there's championships and things. Can you just explain how that works? Like, it reminds me of when we had a wakeboarder on, Lex Balladon. She's a professional wakeboarder and she coaches now. And it's like, well, how do you judge wakeboarding? And it's kind of like with tricks and things. So I understand that. But how does it work with climbing?
Depends. There's different competitions for different disciplines, so this is all indoors. It's not really outdoor competitions, but
it's all all indoor competitions.
You'll get like a few that maybe pop up as like an event across the world, but it's not like a regular thing. Basically for competitions, they'll set a load of climbs and put a load of climbs up, and for bouldering it's you'll usually have five, and there'll be like qualifiers, semis and finals. And basically you have to, it's how many you have to try and get to the top of all of them, and there's different points for how many attempts that you have and how many goes that you have. When it's sport climbing, which is the one with the rope that you clip in as you go up, there'll usually be like two routes and same qualies, semis and finals, and you get a point for how high that you get up the wall, so each hold will be numbered, and it's
So it's quite technical then, and it's quite structured. Okay. So can you just explain what are the key bits that you need to climb? I mean, obviously someone with you who knows about climbing, not just to go off and explore on your own, but you need to be quite prepared, I'd imagine, with proper safety gear, like shoes would be a big one. Like, what sort of things are in like your toolbox?
Toolbox, pair of climbing shoes. Chalk bag with some chalk, so chalk absorbs the sweat on your hands so you can grip better. If you're bouldering, that's all you need, which is ace, because it's no faff, especially if you're indoors and there's problems and mats already there. For rope climbing, you'll need a harness in addition to the chalk and shoes, and a rope, and some quick drawers, which you put in if you're outside, but if you're indoors they're already there. And then trad climbing, which is another discipline altogether, you need everything. You need so much stuff. So you have like a trad rack, which is, sport climbing, there's bolts in the wall already, and you clip a quick draw in, and then you clip your rope to it. For trad climbing, there's nothing in the wall, so you have to take your own gear up and find somewhere that's suitable and safe to attach that to the wall, and then you can attach yourself to that. So you need to take all of this stuff up with you. like if you were to look at it, it's basically like a big jangly belt with loads of stuff coming down off it.
Yeah.
Obviously super heavy.
And if you were like, I'm taking it a stage further now, if you were going up Everest or some mountain and that was like a climb, what kind of climbing is that?
Well, it's mountaineering.
That's like, yeah, that's not climbing.
I think for Everest, a bit of climbing involved, but also for Everest, like in order to do it, you have to be super rich as well. So yeah, let's not get into that. My thoughts on the Everest stuff.
Oh yeah, let's backtrack away from the like elitist stuff.
Backtrack off the, yeah, off the ethics of things. Circle back as well, speaking of ethics, if anybody listening is thinking about climbing or like wanting to start climbing, especially outdoors, please seek advice, or like you have said, Jules, to go with somebody that knows what they're doing, because there's so much ethics involved with outdoor climbing as well, not only for your safety, but also, you know, countryside code and protecting the rock, like I was talking about before, not climbing when wet or further damaging it. There's like loads of resources online, one of them for the UK being the organization called the BMC, which is the British Mountaineering Council, and they have a website and you can and log on, and basically just reiterates everything I've mentioned, and you know, there's just resources you can use and what to do and how to start, but doing it safely, because that's the main thing, you know. It's yes. All well and good. Yeah,
I guess people would head into a rock, like a wall, wouldn't they, to start, if they're really, yeah, if you're a total novice, you wouldn't just, yeah, go and be like, right, I'm going to have a little go up that.
Yeah.
Like, but that wasn't what came through my mind when I was at the Sycamore Gap bit. I was like, oh, I'm just going to have a little crack of that. Yeah. No.
You're like to your husband, like, hold my jacket.
I'm jacket. Exactly. Yeah. So do you have sponsors? And if so, how do you work with the brands that you work with?
Not for climbing, I don't. I used to have like a local deal with Scarpa, which is, they make walking boots and stuff as well, and shoes. But for yoga, I am part of the Patagonia Pro Team. So that I did some work with them over the last couple of years through lockdowns and things, and just made some content, and we've got some stuff coming in the future. But they're they're a great company to work alongside. They're freaking awesome. And they donate, like, I think it's with them, I think it's 1% for the planet. So like 1% of their earnings are donated to organizations. And they also have Patagonia Action Works as well, which you can log on to their website or search Action Works, and you can type in and pop your area in, and it'll connect you with different organizations, local organizations that you can like volunteer or get involved with, which is ace. Like, it's like a really good team. Yeah.
And so you're involved with them through being on their team with you?
Through yoga. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Mm. So how did that come about then? Did they contact you?
They contacted me. I have a pal who is a climber, and he used to work in Newcastle, and he moved to Manchester to manage their, they only have two stores in the UK, Manchester and Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
And he moved down there to manage. And then I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. And a few years back, I like was in Manchester and I saw the store and I was like, oh, I wonder if he's in. And popped in, and it kind of like rekindled it was like a nice re-meeting. And then he got in touch with me and, you know, just to get involved with some yoga stuff. And I said yes. And then lockdown happened and, you know, just kind of continued from there, which was cool.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. That's really unique. I've not come across something like that before, so that's good.
Mm. It's a lot of fun, like the classic thing is like who you know as well as a big, I think for a teacher as well, and you'll know this, Jules, is like you have to put yourself out there, or else you're nothing in life comes to you unless you're an absolutely super established famous person. You have to like graft and put yourself out there.
Do you find that quite easy, or is it a challenge for you?
I didn't at the start, but I think because I came from a background of coaching anyway, so I've always been quite fine with public speaking and things like that. But one thing that when I started teaching, I found hard to, you have to push and put yourself out there. And it's quite like a weird thing to do that, because it almost feels like, oh yeah, and in frigging social media, I hate doing that stuff, like self-promotion, and I feel like a right tosser. But you have to do it, especially for Instagram and things. That's like the platform, and I probably don't do it enough, but it's something that you have to do.
Oh, I know what you mean. It's hard, isn't it, to put yourself out there and not worry about what people might think. So thinking more now about yoga, when was your first yoga class and what was it like?
I'd done stuff at home for years, but like my first proper class actually was when I was on the GB team, and yoga was like introduced to us as a nice complementary movement based activity to work alongside climbing, obviously, because things get tight. And I just remember doing it, and we were with the team, and like some people, especially the boys, were like really inflexible, and everyone was kind of like, oh, I'm not really into this. And I was thinking, I really like this. This hurts. Oh, and I was like, oh, I love it. And it was with a guy, and this was going back when I was probably like 15, I'm 23 now. And it was a guy called, I think his name was Manuel, and it was in Sheffield. So if anyone knows this guy, then he's great. but he was so bendy, and he had such a soft tone. And then from that, I just thought, oh, this is incredible. And then I started a regular practice from there, and haven't looked back since, really.
So that's what, like, when you say, oh, I'm 23, most people I've had on as guests on the podcast have had like previous careers and just stopped and thought, oh, I need to do something different, taking a change in direction to become a yoga teacher. So, And it's not, I suppose it's not really a question, more of an observation. But do you think there might be a different career path for you in the future, so that like you're teaching yoga now, you might get to a point later on and think, oh, I actually want to do this now? Or
I think I'll always teach, but I think in the future I'll have to, who knows what's going to happen in the future, but I definitely won't be able to continue doing like 4 or 5 classes a day, when I'm in my 60s, because that's a lot. It's hard.
Well, never mind for 60s, try 40s.
Maybe I'll get to my 30s and think, God, this is a bit much.
So is that how many classes a week do you teach at the moment, Sid?
At the moment it's 22.
God, yeah. It's a lot, isn't it? Do you feel it's a lot?
I think it's, I wouldn't want to do any more, I don't think. But it's they're split up. So I have my gaps in the day, and the classes are all in the morning or the evening. So I have a gap in the middle of the day. So it kind of feels like I'm going to work. I leave the house in the morning and then I'm going to work again in the evening, or the late afternoon into evening. So I think I've structured it in a way. Pre-lockdown as well, I definitely had my schedule like wrong, and I was, I wasn't happy with the schedule, and then lockdown happened. When we were going back, I thought, right, I need to have a reshuffle and reorganize, because the old one, I was like almost burning out by the time lockdown came. And since I've reshuffled, it's a lot more manageable and it's better. And I like really like it. I love teaching. It's like the best job ever,
I know. Well, that's the thing. It's just getting the right level that's for you. And it's hard when you feel, I think when you spend a lot of time running around commuting and going from class to class, that can be quite draining, can't it, because you're not earning at that time. And same when you have to get to a studio before your hour starts. Okay, it's a nice hourly rate, but then you're there before, you're there after, you've got to travel there. People forget that, don't they, when they...
All that stuff in between that you don't think about, that I didn't think about as well when I was before. Because you go to a class and you see the teacher and you think, wow, that's just amazing. And it is amazing. That part of it is amazing. But like you said, the driving and the being there before your class starts and afterwards. And I don't know how you found it as well, Jules, but I have found recently, more so after lockdown as well, people opening up a lot more and, you know, coming to you after class. And, you know, I've had a few people with like emotional releases. And I think just after the last, I don't want to say 2 years, because I'm hoping it doesn't go to 2 years, but year and a half that we've had, it's hard on people, you know, and so many people have turned to yoga or found yoga in this time, which is incredible, and continued when life is starting to go back to normal as well. But it's caused a lot of trauma for people, and whether they've addressed it or it's just underlying, sometimes it can come out in, you know, a savasana or in a pigeon, like any hip opener. And I found that started to happen a lot more frequently than pre-lockdown.
Interesting. I've not come across that yet. So that's just something to be aware of, isn't it? I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah, it's obvious, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. There's that, like, you have to wonder, because I am aware of more being a listener. I don't want to give any, because obviously I'm not a licensed therapist. My partner's mum, she's a psychotherapist, and I asked her about it and she said, just be the listener, you know, let them open. But, you know, if you were to say something and it would come back, then it's not ideal, is it? So, you know, just be the ear and the shoulder, I guess, as well.
Yeah, definitely. Ear and the shoulder. Exactly. Yeah. Sounds like a plan. Mm-hmm. So has your youth ever been a barrier, do you think, or cause any issues for you in following your own path, especially like with regards to teaching yoga? Have you come across anything like that?
Do you know what? I haven't really, but there's things that I, like, one thing I think youth-wise I'm putting a barrier up for myself, which I think probably makes sense as well, is at some point I want to do my training for pre and postnatal teaching. Mm-hmm. But I'm not doing it at the moment because I'm 23. And I think if I was pregnant or post baby and went to a class and there was a 23-year-old stood at the front of the class, I'd be like, what the hell's this? You know, you've not had a child, or you're not thinking about having a child anytime soon. So for that reason, I haven't done the training, because that's personally what I think my reaction would be if I went to a class. But in terms of day-to-day teaching, I haven't experienced any of that yet.
Mm, it's interesting, isn't it? I know how you feel a little bit around that pregnancy, pre and postnatal yoga, because I've not got kids. So I feel like also, although they're not going to be like, make that assumption, I would feel like if someone said, oh, you know what it's like, and I was like, no, not really, or you don't know how it feels, I would not want that thrown back at me as like, because I think that would be quite an hard one to just smile and say something nice to, like I'd really struggle with that, I think. So it's quite interesting that you want to feel like you're in the right place, or at least kind of the right age group to be.
Yeah, definitely.
Not that people can't have kids at that, but I know what you mean. Like, you want to feel like you kind of know a bit about it rather than just looking in from the outside.
Exactly. Yeah. And trustworthy as well. You know, I would trust, I think I would probably trust someone more if speaking from personal experience is always valuable, isn't it? And, you know, you can have a bit more playful in terms of your own experience rather than just regurgitating a textbook or a training. So I think for that sort of thing, I think it's definitely not necessary at all, but for me, for what I would want to do, I think it was necessary.
Yeah, I get you.
That's not me saying think, oh, I'm going to have to pop out a kid.
No, I know what you mean. No, it's funny, isn't it? We'd both come in at that similar conclusion, but from totally different tangents. That's interesting. So what's your plan for the future? Like, is it an option for you to be a professional climber? Is that an option? Is that like a job?
No, definitely not. I've passed my prime.
Have you? At 23, you're on the heap now.
Maybe not like past my prime, but I'm not interested in that. And also, I'm not good enough and never have been good enough.
Oh,
yeah. Just I do it for because I love it and the passion is there. And I hope to continue that lifelong and for that to always be prevalent. But no, definitely not professionally. And same with yoga as well. I hope for that to always be there. I was teaching a class, what day is it today? Thursday. On Tuesday night. And we were doing some hand balances. We're doing some crow and some flying splits and things. And I said at the end of the, because some people were really managing, they have a really strong practice, and some people were just doing things on blocks and just kind of working into it. And I said, you know, these kind of hand balances and things, they're great and they're really fun, but they're not necessary. They're not, you know, they're great for building strength and confidence, and they're awesome party tricks, but you're not going to be able to do these when you're in your 80s, most likely. But you can always do sun salutations and forward folds and, you know, things that will stay with you lifelong. So, you know, don't get too bogged down and rigging, like, and for anyone as well, don't get too bogged down that you can't do a bloomin' handstand, or you know, it's not necessary, but yeah, looks cool.
How would you say that yoga aids and support climbers? Like, you mentioned about your shoulder before, and like that opening up of the chest, and I guess climbing, you're hunched to the extreme, aren't you? Trying to get up. That's my climbing impression. I'm glad we can't see that. So do you host, like, you host regular sessions, like yoga sessions for climbers? Like, how are they specific? Is it just a chest opening, or what other things is there?
Well, I think yoga's functional movement as well, isn't it? It's not just, you know, somewhat people say, so for example, like, I have a climber friend, he's, oh yeah, I've tried stretching, and his definition of stretching would be to sit in a straddle and just go yank and try and touch his toes, or something similar, you know, side body bending and just yanking to try and get over. But you know, you come onto your mat and it's almost like a little dance, isn't it, sometimes? And it's functional, and you know, you can build a strong flow, and whilst you're lengthening tendons, muscles, they're also still really active. Everything is always active, isn't it, when you're in a practice? It's not passive and you know, letting gravity do the work for you in most things. Some standing folds with bent legs can take that, but I think it's as well like body maintenance, so and injury prevention as well. The whole, not just physically, but the whole mindfulness aspect comes into it. When you're climbing, you have to be so aware of everything that's going on in your body at once. Like, what's my hand doing? What's my foot doing? This shoulder needs to drop. This, you know, my core is engaged, and all of these same things. You know, that in yoga as well, when you're in a posture, you think about aligning your hips and you know, and it becomes second nature after a while for these postures. So I think that same awareness on the mat in yoga can easily translate onto the wall as well. And just for you can do, oh my god, it's just endless breath work can help if you're getting stressed whilst climbing, or if you're resting between things and you know your adrenaline is high, you want to do something, you want to send a climb, breath work can help. You know, you can use box breath or anything, even just being aware of your breath, longer inhales and exhales can just help with that. Yeah.
So loads then, it seems to be a lot of crossover.
Loads.
And I read as well that you're passionate about the environment and climate change. Like, I don't know, is that right? And can you just share a bit of your thoughts about it?
the world is ending. Yeah, I'm not a member of XR, which is Extinction Rebellion. I have a few friends that are, but I'm not a member of XR just for various reasons. But I am plant-based and I try to, you know, reduce as much single-use plastic as I can.
I don't want to open this can. I feel like if the can's open, there'll be lots of worms come out. Just, well, tell me a little bit about, like, I mean, this morning we're recording for next week or the week after, and there's been some big flooding in Germany. And then a couple of weeks ago, like there was some big fires. There's been fires around these heat domes.
The ocean's on fire as well, might I add.
Really?
Yeah. Oil leak, but yeah.
I mean, that it's all, it can't just be coincidence, can it? This is all linked, and it's quite scary, really, when you think about the earth being on fire in different places.
Terrifying. It is absolutely terrifying. I think in schools as well, there's a definite lack of education on it. And I don't know why I'm not sure about other countries, to be fair, but in the UK, there's like basically nothing in schools that is, there's no education about it. And I really don't know why, especially the way that the world's going at the moment. And, you know, you look in 10, 20 years time, what the environmental impact is going to be. I don't know why the education isn't there in schools now, why it shouldn't be a mandatory part of the, you know, the curriculum. It baffles me.
It's interesting that, isn't it? I've not really thought about that before, but I suppose it just falls through the gaps of kind of geography and science. It doesn't really sit anywhere.
But education of textbook wise, you know, things like back in the day when I think it's climate change now, but it's global warming, that's all part of it. But it's more of that and less what can we do to, you know, I think just general psychology wise, you relate to something more. Any given situation, if it's personalized to you, and if you put yourself in those shoes, you're going to relate to something much more, no matter what that situation is. So I think probably changing the view of that to what can you do instead of what can you know, what can the world do, obviously that's good as well, but I think about your own situation and what can you do to change, you know, even little tiny things. Like, for instance, one thing that really gets on my wick is, like, fast fashion and consumerism to a mass extent. And that's something so marginal that is so easy to change, you know, even without, like, I mean, the number one thing that everyone can do to help at the moment is eat less meat. That's the main thing. But when talking about consumerism, you know, the mass production, just don't buy. So, like, just do secondhand, or, you know, if you're going to get something, make sure it's something that you need rather than want. And like another, if you're getting something, maybe get rid of something else, just do like swap out. And look, it's like less, that classic less is more phrase.
Yeah.
What do you really need? If you were on a desert island, what are you going to bring with you?
Well, just, are you going to bring a lot less? I certainly need a lot less now than I did 4 or 5 years ago, I tell you.
Definitely. I relate to what can I fit in my van. I can't fit everything in my van. So I'm like, what do I need that's going to fit in this tiny cupboard? Not much.
Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. I'm glad you did. Lastly, I think, you know, I'm new to the area. Can you give me some recommendations for good places to eat and experience in and around Newcastle? Just a couple of gems, maybe something like plant-based. I'm not a vegan, but I'm vegetarian for sure. So is there anywhere where you think, oh, you've got to go there?
Well, I thought about this, you know, when you said, and then I saw that you've been to one of the places. You went to Tea Sutra in Newcastle, didn't you?
Yes, I did go to Tea Sutra.
I thought, oh yeah, that's a really good one. That's really niche. She's not going to know that. And then I saw on your Instagram like 2 days later that you'd been.
It's lovely in there. It's like a nice little old tea shop, isn't it? And it's just so calming. You go, it's like right in the center, or like by the bus station, it's all hustle and bustle. And then you come up the stairs and it's like, oh, and it's just like so it's nice. Like I loved it.
Floor to ceiling tea. It's heaven.
Yeah, and like they've got a little sign saying we don't serve coffee. Yeah. Can you imagine people like, oh, I just want a coffee. No, get out.
One other place, yours, if you've not been, is something called the Magic Hat Cafe. Have you been there?
No, not been.
So that is in the centre as well. It's right next to the art gallery, which name has slipped my mind.
I'll have a look at it though, Magic Hat. I think I'm already following them. I must have found them and but I haven't been yet.
Oh God, it's amazing. So that all of their food is done with food waste.
Ah, so, okay.
Yeah, so, and even the bread they'll get, it's bread that's left over from a local bakery and it's all like great sourdough and things. It's amazing. And the menu changes every week depending on what produce and what, you know, stock they get given. And it's pay as you feel as well. So they give you a kind of guide price. I know your face went there.
Like, oh no, it's awkward. Feeling a bit uncomfortable already. Yeah. No, so they give you a guide price. That's good.
Yeah, and then you can, you know, I guess as well, it's good because if you are on low income or, you know, you're struggling, then the option is there because it's all, it doesn't cost them anything in terms of food. And most of the staff there as well are volunteers and they're all so lovely. I think they have a regular a chef that is like a permanent staff member, but most of the staff are volunteers.
Wow, that sounds really interesting.
Considering how nice they all are as well. Like they're all so lovely. But that it's really good if you haven't been there, and the food is great as well.
Right. I'm going to try that then on your recommendation. Thank you very much. So Sid, what's next for you? Like what have you got in the pipeline for your future career and life in general, do you think?
Ooh, how long are we talking?
short to medium term, I think.
Short to medium term. I've got some spinach in the fridge for my tea. For that.
Not that short term.
The next, so like 5 years, I want to travel as much as I can, develop my teaching, hopefully do another training as well I'm always learning, always wanting to improve. Possibly I'm toying with the idea of opening a studio in the future. Move to Sheffield as well is another one in the next couple of years. Hopefully that will be.
Lots of things in the pipeline then. Good. Yeah. Okay. So, and lastly, I always ask everyone this, what are you most proud of in your life so far? God.
Do you think you'll get more listeners if I cry?
Well, no. You might. I mean, I might. I can tell people there's crying.
No, I'm not going to cry. What am I most proud of in my life so far? I think where I'm at, I'm quite proud of where I'm at the moment in terms of, you know, pre-teaching, I did a job that I really didn't like and I did it, you know, to save as much as I could. I bought a van. I think I'm pretty well traveled for where I'm at the moment. I'm really happy with how my business is going and where my teaching's taking me. Lots of doors opened and continuing to do so. And I've got my head screwed on, I think.
Oh, that's so good.
I think I'm just happy. Like I'm in a good place and that's what I'm proud of. Where I'm proud of myself for where I'm at the moment.
Good. Yeah. So if you weren't a yoga teacher or a climber, what would you be?
Oh my God, I don't know. Probably have like moved to Spain and be working, like some zero waste story. Like, I don't know. Someone's asked me this before. I have no idea what I'd be doing. I was going to go to uni and I was toying with that idea of studying history for a while. So maybe something to do with that. Hmm. Or probably gone to uni and not been able to get a job with the degree. So
sounds about right.
Back to square one.
So now we've come on to the quick fire questions. So nothing to, don't look worried. You look a bit worried. It's just, it's just go with your gut. There's no right or wrong, of course. So late to bed or early to rise?
Early to rise.
Favorite tune to dance to?
Oh, this is a song called Day and Night by a French artist called Dubwell, which is great. It's like funk.
Okay. Who do you look up to?
My mum.
What's your favourite film, Sid?
Maybe The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, that's a good one. I've not seen that for a while. On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
I'd say I'm a strong 6.
strong 6. Just mountainside or lakeside?
Oh, come on, mountainside.
Yeah, had to be. That was a no-brainer. Silly question. This one might be a silly question as well, actually. Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio?
Duh.
Okay. No. What's your star sign?
I'm Taurus.
Who would you swap lives with just for a day?
Oh, God. This isn't a quick fire.
You're quite quick compared to some people, I have to say.
Maybe Donald Trump, so I could undo a load of stuff. In fact, no, I can't now. I could undo some things. Although I don't have as much power, I could certainly help. Not like I want to be Donald Trump in any way, but just to try and clean up a bit of his mess, I think, and okay. Save some dignity left in the world.
I know what you're saying. Countryside or city?
Countryside.
If you owned a yacht, what would you call it?
The bouncing bateau, and bateau is boat in French.
Yep, got it. Describe your baddest and brightest leggings.
Oh God, I could get them out here.
It's a hand. They're straight away. You're right. Your hands on, yeah, right on them.
Right on them. I have a pair which, oh no, they're over there. They've got some like leaves, fern leaves on them, and they've got some orange and yellow. They're pretty cool. I've also got some leopard print shorts, which I only wear when everything else is in the wash.
That's the go-to, like, oh no, I'm gonna have to get those out.
I felt like I needed to apologize.
What's at the top of your bucket list?
Oh, bucket list. I'd really love to go on a, do like a van swap road trip in America and do an extended trip there. Yeah.
Okay. And favorite place in the whole wide world?
One of them is definitely Fontainebleau in France. I think it's pretty magical. Yeah.
I'm going to check the water thing now. And what's your favourite yoga pose?
Oh God. I've got two. Either Warrior 2 or Triangle. Warrior 2, because I just think it makes you look badass. I just think it's just a friggin' awesome. Like, hips and chest puffed out and proud. I just think it's ace. Triangle, because it feels incredible all the way down the side of the rib cage.
Yeah, I hear that. Great. Sounds good. So now, Savasana sounds. What is your favorite music or sound for a Savasana? Have you got any advice or track that you want to recommend that listeners can have a little listen to?
Highway to Hell by AC/DC.
You're joking, right?
Yeah.
I was going to be like, please don't do that.
So most of the music I use, I have a lot of meditation style music, which is actually on Apple. But I like to use music with birdsong in it, because I think it's just gorgeous. Low, like, phonic bass sounds with some, like, the contrast of the birdsong. My boyfriend's dad says that birdsong is perfume for the ears.
Oh, what a lovely thing to say.
Yeah, so he's super into like identifying, you know, all the different types of bird song. But I think that's a really nice phrase, and that's kind of stuck with me. So I love to hear bird song, and if you close your eyes, it almost, you could be transported anywhere, you know.
Yeah, that's so true. And is there a track that you've got in mind where there's this bird song with the?
Yeah, I can find the name of it now. It's called, where's it gone? Green Depths,
okay,
by Triangles in the Mist. And it's like, it's supposed to be a meditation track, but it's 20 minutes long.
So depending, oh, wow. Okay.
How long your vasana is, then, you know, if you're doing a yin practice, go for it. But it's really nice. And there's some bird song and it's gorgeous. Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you for that. That's good. Not come across that before, so I'll be sharing that with the listeners on your behalf. So thank you as well just for chatting to me. It's really been good to get to know you properly. Yeah. And then listeners, you can contact Sid if you'd like to share any thoughts on the podcast, or if you've got any questions for her. She's at, her Instagram is at Northern Soul Yoga. That's Northern _ Soul, SOUL _ Yoga. And then yes, you can get in touch with her through that. So thank you so much, Sid, for your time. Been a pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks for having me, Jules. Cheers.
You're welcome. You've been listening to That Yoga Woman's podcast with me, Jules Buchanan. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it, share it on social media, rate it, write a nice review, and subscribe to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Links and information can be found on the episode page in the podcast section of my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/podcast. If you'd like to show some support for the podcast, you can do that through PayPal. The donation link is www.paypal.me/thatyogawoman. The last thing I'll mention is my line of organic cotton yoga-inspired tops. I designed a small range of vest tees and sweatshirts that are perfect to teach or do yoga in. Have a look online, check out my shop on my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/shop. Have a look around my store and make an order. See you soon.